Okay, we're ready to begin again. My name is Terry Shillington. I'm your moderator. And as we invite Paul back to the platform, Paul, just want to remind you about the two announcements I made. Next Tuesday evening, candidates for the federal election will be in a public forum. And next Thursday, watershed management with Wendy DeVent. So I invite you to go to the mic at the back. Name yourself, be brief, and let's put some questions to Paul Hinman.
Am I ready?
You're ready.
You can hear me? Good afternoon, Mr. Hinman, and thank you very much for coming.
Your name?
Pardon?
Your name, please.
Oh, I'm Emil Gunlock. I'm sorry. Just one question, Paul. I just want your opinion on the length of sessions in the province of Alberta. We have probably the highest income of any province, and we definitely have the lowest number of legislature days. Don't we deserve more than that, or do you think that's sufficient?
Well, in a democracy, the fact is that there's a huge majority in this government. We have to respect that. And on the real things that we should be debating, the $25 billion that we spend the least amount of time. We spent more time debating on how we're going to have the care of animals and changing the Animal Care Act than we did on a $1.5 billion bill. They have the majority. They want to vote it. They can go through. Our problem isn't the time that we spend there. It's how we spend the time. Oh, legislators could spend their, we could be in there 24/7 debating it, but in a democracy we come to a vote and then we can proceed. I was told to give short, succinct answers. That's the toughest.
Excuse me,
but I
asked
questions to use the mic. Thanks. My name is John Boris. I listened attentively to what you had to say, Mr. Hinman, and I keep raking my brain to say, or to find out, ask, how what you propose to do is different from the present PCs. Half of them were alliance members someplace down the road, and if they weren't alliance, they were conservatives and in shape and form. And matter of fact, down east, they've even got the liberals so close to the conservatives or vice versa that they start shaking their head. It doesn't matter who you elect. The same result comes. And what have you got to say about that?
I appreciate the question, and like I say, I didn't get through half the things I wanted to in 25 minutes. Very difficult, but what we need to
well,
do...
Well, could I ask you how I was going to wind up? I was going to ask you, do you think that the proportional representation would be a cure? That's what I was going to end up with.
That's question number two. I'll go with the first one. That we need smaller government, not bigger government. We need less rules and regulations, not more rules and regulations. We need less taxes. Our current government, federally, provincially, have the idea that we'll tax more and give more. It's a bottomless pit. We can't do it. We need to turn it around. We need smaller government. We need lower taxes. And we need to protect our freedom. We need to have our autonomy and not be having to deal with everything, whether it's national daycare, whether it's seniors care, whether it's health care, whether it's CASE. We have all these federal programs, and I don't know one that is working good across the country. We have to come up with our solutions here. We can and we will, but we have to stand on our own first where it's our responsibility and not always look up and say, hey, Dad, hey, Grandpa, what are you going to do for us? And then adapt to that. We're strapped and gagged and handcuffed and drug in saying, this is what you're going to do, and we're going to pay 15% of it. You come up with the rest of the money. And so it's a major problem. We need smaller government, less taxes, and we need to protect our rights so that we can be free and strong. The second question, proportional government, that's a huge, huge subject. We have a problem. In Alberta, we've fought for years for a Triple E Senate. I don't know that we'll ever be able to make inroads on proportional representation because of the huge numbers that have migrated to the cities now. Two-thirds of the population sits in Calgary and Edmonton. They have 46 or 50 MLAs. They have the majority. And federally, we know that we have six senators. There's 105 or whatever. They're not going to give it up. I don't know in a democracy how we can change that imbalance of power.
Paul, Howard Forsyth. Much of what you said is pretty common sense. So I keep looking for something to ask a question that'll go a little deeper. And the smaller government is the one that gets me. Because the choice is not between regulations and regulations. If we reduce government sufficiently, we can let the corporations run the world. And I taught university economics. I'm not sure that would be much of a solution. For one thing, a large part of the operations of corporations are secret. You don't have much access to it. So we have democracy on the theory that if we have to live by regulations, if we could produce a simple society like it was actually even 100 years ago when I was born, that'd be nice. But that's not the kind of world we live in. I got an oil bill in McGrath for my house that's winterized. Use of gas was $9. The total bill was $45.
Can you put your question,
regulations,
Howard?
Regulations, regulations. You want regulations by corporations to run the world?
Absolutely not. And what we need is common law, which what we were based on, and gives everyone equal opportunity. And we can very much make the laws such that small businesses can survive. But right now, with the penalty, it's very difficult to compete with huge corporations that can write things off, have many benefits. We're on a slope field, and the small individual, small business, is at a huge disadvantage. We need to level the playing field, and we can do that with rules and regulations. The regulations, I'm a free enterprise person. I have a feedlot. We used to have people come and buy beef from us and get processed by a local butcher that isn't provincially inspected. Many people say, I'd never go there and have my stuff processed there. And I say, it's a free world, I appreciate that. I've only had mine done, it's the only beef I eat. I trust it. I don't need the government to come in and say, you're not allowed to do that. I mean, a good example, when I was 17, I worked in a butcher shop. We had the big maple blocks that we did all of our butchering on. In the wisdom of our infinite government, they says we need nylon, not maple. Now, 20 years later, they're realizing, you know what, nylon harbors those bacteria and they grow in there, whereas maple, for somehow the butchers figured out 400 years ago that it swells shut with the moisture and bacteria doesn't grow in there. Government doesn't have the answers. People do. We get educated, whether it's with our health, education. I trust in the individuals. If we want dad and grandpa to run our lives, bigger government. If we want to be free, we need to be educated and responsible for our activities.
Trevor Page. I wonder how free you want to be. We've heard a lot in the run-up to the federal election, at least in rhetoric, for Quebec. And I wonder if the Alberta Alliance were to come into Alberta and govern the province, whether you would want an independent country, and if you didn't want an independent country, and you wanted the devolution of more power from Ottawa, what specifically would you want to control?
Well, we know, like, for example...
But I'd like the answer to the first question.
What was the
first independence?
On independence? I love my province and I love my country. I believe that we're stronger with unity. But if we continue with the injustices that we have across this country, we will become divided. We have to change the ways. They're very divisive. Our current democracy is more like a mobocracy, where we allow people to vote in a majority to take away from the minority. And that produces an injustice, and when there's injustice, eventually you end up with a revolution, whether it's a friendly one, a violent one, and that's what's happening. And we need to back up and say, you know what, we'll protect people's rights. And that's their life, their freedom, and their property. That's what it started with. It will go back to that. But when we say we're going to protect people's benefits, a huge problem. And that's what the real debate about. It's about social benefits, not about our civil rights, our life, our liberty, and our property. And if we protect those things, we'll protect our country. I'm not sure I understand the question. Rephrase it, or...
I think you said that if your party is elected, you're not in favor of independence for Alberta. But the second part of the question was, if you're not, and you're not, I think...
Well, I believe in democracy. I mean, if Albertans are so upset because of our injustices and want to leave, that's what we'll have to do.
It is an option as far as your party is concerned.
Well, everything in life is an option, I believe, if we're living in a free country.
I'm taking that as a yes. But are you also advocating the devolution of power from the federal government to the province? And if so, in which specific areas?
Well, we just need to go back to the B&A Act. There's many areas, but education, transportation, health care, what are some other ones that they've continued? CFIA steps over its bounds in many areas, won't allow people to export unless they meet their criteria. And we have just an overwhelming amount of red tape and bureaucracy that kills free enterprise. And I mean, when it comes to our national policies, when it comes to an army protecting our country, those are federal jurisdictions, but not education, not health care, not on social, I mean, even on the lowest level of looking after our homeless people, we do a far better job if, in fact, we were to change our laws. We can give to a political party and get 75% back on a tax credit. But can we give to the Mustard Seed, the Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, and get that same? No, we can't. And we need to focus and allow that, again, the taxation is to the benefit of the federal government, not to the benefit of our communities. Charity comes from people, not from government. Frederick Bastiat said it best, and he calls them false philanthropists. I call government fraudulent philanthropists. They take your money and my money, and they give it away, and they do it in a very, very poor way usually.
Thanks for your responses.
Susan Giffen is my name. I would like a little bit of clarification, please, on your stand on minority rights. You said something about a mobocracy.
Mobocracy.
A mobocracy, okay. I would like to know what you feel about minority rights.
Excellent question. Thank you. We're based on the rule of law. I believe, going back to John Locke and those, that the two basic, if you want to call them foundation laws, are first, we have our individual rights, but we can't infringe on other people's life or their property. And if we infringe on that, then we're breaking the law. And the other one is tort law or contract law, that we must do all that we agree to do. And if you and I strike up a deal on whether it's mowing your lawn, we both go into it willingly. But if I break that contract, then you can have recourse on me. And it's the same. Minority rights are protected like everybody's. If we can't take their life, their freedom, or their property, they are protected. And we don't need to get a whole bunch of little sub-laws to protect people's rights. They're very much protected when we say your life, your liberty, and your property are protected. But I've confused you, so maybe you want to ask another question.
You may. You have to name yourself again, though.
I'm still Susan Giffen. Okay, so if you are a minority, then all you
What would be an example of a minority right? Well, what's the minority right that you're concerned about?
Well, let's talk gay marriage. Let's talk abortion, let's talk any of those social issues.
Those aren't rights, but okay.
Maybe therein lies the difference in the definition of what is a right.
Yes.
But from what I hear you saying, I'm thinking about a minority person in society. For example, a Native person in Lethbridge going to knock on the door of an apartment saying, I would like to live here, and the landlord saying, I don't want you, you're Native. Now, you said, if I'm not going to kill you, or if I'm... Then that's all I have to promise, but I don't have to give you a place to live.
That's affirmative action, and I should grab my red book and read section 15, 1 and 2 that we have in there. But affirmative action is reverse discrimination. And if someone is that way, we can't legislate and force people to not be discriminating anymore. But if as a society we live the higher law, someone else will do that. And if, in fact, there's no place for those people to go, then that's where churches, charity, whether it's the Kingsmen, society comes together and looks after our own if we allow them. But if we say it's the government that needs to protect all these people, we need to protect them from, like I say, they're wanting to take their life, wanting to take their freedom, and wanting to take their property. But we can't protect people from themselves. I believe that that's it's just on a spiral vortex into a black hole that we can never win on that.
I'm Selim Gunlock, too, Susan. Municipal Government Act states that the only way there can be a conflict of interest is if you directly receive money in conflict of your position. This is a recent change, well, not recent change, in the last 10 years by the current government. Would your party, ask a simple question, would your party change it to be a little more clarified or even take it back to the last municipal act that had 14 or 15 reasons that were conflict of interest?
Well, I'm no expert on that, and I'm not sure that I've read the new one, but what's the conflict again if you do what? Oh, no, there's all kinds of deals under the table, and no, anything that's for my own personal benefit or anyone else's is benefiting personally, or their friends, relatives, whatever, is a conflict of interest. And my favorite saying, quoting the Premier, is we don't like picking winners and losers. We have no business being in business. And I'll add to it, but they sure like picking their friends. And whether that's in Fort McMurray on land deals or Cargill and Lakeside for packing plants. And it's wrong when government picks friends or has arbitrary political laws.
Do you want to use the mic? You're welcome to elaborate, but use the mic.
I'm trying to focus more, Paul, on personal. Okay? If you, for example, you get in government and somebody builds you a house, that's not a conflict.
Absolutely it is.
Well, it's not according to the municipal code.
I realize that, but okay. If we go back to common law, we realize it is. And what you talked earlier about economics, or I guess it was Howard, Albert Bowden, I love his quote, economics, the science of common sense. We need common sense brought back into lots of these things.
And then we need a new government.
Absolutely. That's why I'm running.
Hi, my name is Mark Nelson. You use the term arbitrary political law. Can you explain what that is? And can you explain how you think the laws for a society should be derived?
Well, let me just grab my constitutional book here. And I should really just get my loose leaf copies of it because I don't have this marked as well, but it's under section 15. Oh, got the French side, just a minute here. Okay, equality of rights under our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 15, Subsection 1. Every individual is equal before and under the law. If we had a period there, it's very clear. And there's a gentleman just on Rutherford the other day talking from BC who talked about Pierre Elliott and why he had such a complex constitution. He says it should just be simple. Because as soon as you start adding names or races or ethnic or anything else to a list, you exclude everything that isn't on the list. And so if we had every individual is equal before and under the law, period, that covers every individual. But then they go on and they say, and has the right to equal protection and equal benefit of the law without discrimination. And in particular, without discrimination based on race, national or ethnic origin, color, religion, sex, age, or mental, or physical disability. And so when you take something like that and say, okay, that we have the right for equal benefit, and we can take someone that perhaps is mentally challenged and say, now they have the right to have a doctor's degree in philanthropy, and they want to study. And so according to our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we owe that to them because it's their right, because another Canadian has obtained that. And we can't win on that. And that's why I say we need to back up and just say it's every individual to be treated equally and protected equally from the law, period. And then we don't need to list any other group. Everybody is then protected. Does that answer your question, or we got off track? That?
We'll move on and you can come back. My name is Bob Byers. My question is your vision of rights. And 100 years ago, the law was that women did not have the right to vote. And the women here today wouldn't have had the right to vote.
Yeah.
So obviously rights evolved in the law. And yet you're giving me the impression that you're probably against gay marriage. You're probably against the rights of abortion. And yet, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, these will obviously be rights.
I'll answer your question with a question, and then we'll go on with that. Currently, we have two or three levels of government, and we have opposition parties that are fighting, and this depends whether they're talking federal or provincial, that are fighting very much against private medicine. And yet it's interesting when you bring up the subject of abortion, that the majority of that is provided. It's covered by public funding, but in private enterprise clinics. And we can't have it both ways, but there's a difference between civil rights and inalienable rights. And I mean, when it comes to our fundamental freedoms, and this freedoms is different than rights. Charter number 2, or section 2, everyone has the following fundamental freedoms. Freedom of conscience and religion. Freedom of thought, belief, opinion, and expression, including freedom of the press and other media of communications. Freedom of peaceful assembly and freedom of association. Gay rights, they have the freedom of association. I mean, I don't have a problem with freedoms. There's a huge difference between freedoms, benefits, and rights. And if they're not harming us or causing us problems, then it is their freedom to do that. But it doesn't change.
Gay marriage does not harm you. It doesn't harm me. It doesn't harm anyone.
Well, I'd like you to explain that to a father in Massachusetts who's been taken to court because they want to teach his son in kindergarten about those values, and he says they're not my values. I don't want that taught. They're going against his religious values, and he's lost that. He's been banned from the school. He's banned from their property, and the student must come and listen to that type of information. And those people who are preaching that we're not tolerant are the least tolerant. And freedom means that we do have that freedom. But there's a huge difference between freedom and rights. And they want you to have to listen to it. You have to be indoctrinated. And human nature is that when we're imprinted, that first imprint is much more difficult to overcome than truth even. And I believe in the families. The families are the foundation. And it's their freedom to teach their children as they wish, and not the federal government to say that nylon butcher blocks are better, that hydrogenated vegetable oils are better, or to go through a whole bunch of other ones, that we don't need a federal government stepping in on education and saying, no, this is what we have to teach them.
I believe in the family values as well, probably just as much as you do. But if I'm allowed another question?
Sure.
Your view of health care, private health care, is that the American view of the American system?
Absolutely not.
Because they're and not everyone is covered. It's costing almost twice as much as ours. Yeah, that's the private model.
If I was to take a view, I'd look at the Stockholm view in Sweden. Worked very well. And what I want to say is the government will pay for services, but not for management.
Sweden and the other Nordic countries are socialist countries. You agree that their system is...
I'm not partisan to say that I won't take from whatever... What we're after is truth. Truth is what makes us free. And if we don't understand it, we can go back, for example, in health and what causes ulcers. We've gone for years and years struggling on what it was, and then we realized that antibiotics can cure ulcers. We don't hear about ulcers like we did, but we went through a long dearth of education on how to cure it. And
Please use the mic.
He's saying knowledge evolves.
I'll give you one final comment here in response.
Knowledge evolves. Knowledge evolves, cultures evolve. You know, that's the way things work.
Yes, but in a democracy where we have freedoms, we're not forced to take on the so-called big brother that we know best.
And if you think our system should evolve towards the Nordic system...
Through a what?
If you think our system should evolve towards the system that's present in Sweden and Denmark, that's fine with me.
No. I said their example... of their healthcare system, and that's one of the problems that we can't...
You're picking and choosing.
Remember the picture that I showed you? There's a big picture.
Okay, we're going to move on.
Thank you.
My name is Henry Heinen, and Paul, I have two questions. One is, would it be prudent for your party to consolidate all the other smaller parties in the province? I've read something that they were trying that and you weren't successful because... You know, right now it seems to me you're a lone voice crying in the wilderness. And the second question is, and I want to pick up on what John started, give us three specific things that you would do differently from the present government, because I haven't sensed that. And I want to know, they did this, but we would do it this way. Because otherwise, what's the incentive for voting Alberta Alliance?
Okay. The first thing that we would do would be to reduce the... taxes that we have in the province. I've been an advocate as other parties there, and like I say, I don't care where good policies come from. Thomas Paine wrote it best. A man doesn't make policies, he only discovers them or truth, and we need to discover them. But we need to eliminate health care premiums. They're a tax. They're not taxed all across the country. That should have been eliminated in our budget this last year. We need to raise the benefit or the minimum tax benefit, I believe, to at least $20,000. We have people in this country, provincially we're at $14,000, and that's an improvement, but we could easily go to $20,000, and we should be pushing Paul Martin and company to say that we need to raise the maximum tax exemption for the benefit of the working poor. They need their money in their pocket. Why do we tax someone federally that earns $10,000? That's very regressive, in my opinion, and we need to look at setting up with our huge surpluses that we have right now. I would like to see the Heritage Trust Fund increase, and when we need to get things to have a fund there that is worthy, that we can sustain things in tough times, and I would like to see a formula put in place, and at this point, I would say 30% of the royalty money that's coming into the province that would be distributed on a per capita basis to municipal governments. Those are three, and if you want to stay for a couple hours, we can probably go about 40 or 50 more.
Thanks for the...
Trevor Page, I'd like to follow up on one of the previous audience members' questions on healthcare. But I really would like a specific reply for Alberta, Canada, and not how they do it in Massachusetts or in Sweden. And it's, are you in favor of public healthcare or privatized healthcare or a combination of both? And if it's the latter, what is it you're in favor of for healthcare?
Okay, well, first I want to make a statement. People buy prototypes, not ideas. And if we can't show a prototype that's working, many people will scoff at the ideas, and that's why I refer to those other areas. We have a tremendous healthcare system, but we're ranked 30th in the world. We can and we should do better, and the problem is that we have a monopoly at this current time, I believe, in the healthcare system. The first thing that I would like to do in the province is to pay for services. And if we have to hire actuaries or if we put them up for bids, for example, I'll use MRIs. And I've been going to get the numbers, but unfortunately the provincial government doesn't see fit to give me any research money. So it's very difficult. But if, for example, we do 10,000 MRIs a year in the province and we're to put it up for bid and say we're going to put out a 3 or a 5 year contract, what would be the bid? And whether the Lethbridge Regional Hospital, whether Calgary, whether Medicine Hat would say, oh, they're going to pay, they're going to do that. We can buy the equipment and put it in here, and they extrapolate out and say, if we can get $700 in MRI, it's worthwhile for us to do it. Put competition into our public system to allow people who want to provide those services to get paid for those services. Right now, it's a monopoly. Like I say, angioplasty, we don't have an option to do it here in Lethbridge because our provincial counterparts say, you can't afford to do it and it's not worthwhile. We're not going to give the funding there. If they would fund the service, I will trust our appointed, not elected, health board to say, this is worthwhile. We're going to bring in an angioplasty surgeon who wants to come back from the state and we're going to go ahead with it. But if they were to do that, they would lose from their capital resources and have to suffer services from somewhere else because they wouldn't get paid to have that service provided here in Lethbridge. It's detrimental to our system, I believe.
One or two last questions?
While I'm waiting for them, what I say is I believe they're creating the perfect storm, that we're going to get to the position where Alberta is so upset with our waiting lines and all the other problems and our shortage of physicians and doctors and nurses that we're going to throw up our arms and say, we need to privatize. They can't do it. We're being set up to fail, in my opinion, the way they're doing it. And we've got to wake up and change it because to pay for services, not pay for management. We have a huge bureaucracy. Just for example, the collection of the premiums. How much do we spend every year trying to collect those and all of the bureaucracies? How many nurses could we hire instead of doing that? I believe a lot. This in the budget this last spring, they hired 1,000 extra people for paper pushers. And I said, if you're going to hire more people, we need policemen, we need nurses, we need doctors, we need school teachers. Those are the services that the people need. We didn't need 1,000 more paper pushers to look after the $3 or $4 billion more dollars that they were trying to redistribute and centralize, saying, we know best. This is what you need here. This is what you need over there. They don't know what we need best. You go talk to the different mayors, the different Reeves. They don't know, and it's a constant battle to plead your...